This episode of The Guild is brought to you by Creative Edge. Creative Edge specializes in getting exposure for independent writers and authors and artists of all type. They specialize in arranging events such as book signings, library or school presentations, or any event related to the arts in general. If you are interested in seeing what Creative Edge can do for you, go into www.creative-edge.services. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Guild Podcast. I am your host, Christopher Mary Holtman, and I am here basically just to kind of announce new and exciting things. The Guild, or the Writers, Artists, and Readers Guild, ever since its actual inception back in 1997, when it was a webzine on GeoCities, was always kind of planned to be a forum for a variety of content and also purveyors. So, and very early on, a lot of the people that were part of the Guild kind of, well, left and did their own thing and didn't want to keep up the pace. So it's kind of fun that this is going back to where it used to be. This episode, an interview with Tim Mendes, who has been on the show before and has hosted a little bit. He also After Hours, which he still does. This is part of What Are You Selling, which will be hosted by David Green. So these coming episodes will be very David Green heavy. It will be part of his show. And you can also catch it on his YouTube channel, which we will link to in the show notes. Another announcement is that Donovan Monster Smith will be joining the fold with his own show, where he interviews people of, you know, in within the horror industry mainly, and that's kind of cool. And he's also going to be taking over a little bit of the other things that I don't have time to do, basically, because there's so many other things going on, and especially people in the States, where it'd be easier for him because he's located in the States. So In the Mouth of Monster podcast now comes under the umbrella of the Guild. So that will be kind of cool. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in, for listening, and everything like that. Also John Holtman for providing the music for this show. I will not be returning at the end of the interview. I will let David end it as he sees fit. So, without further ado, what are you selling, Tim Mendes?
Hello, welcome to the first episode, our installment of What Are You Selling? What are you selling? With me, I know it's the first one, and I could not start this interview with different authors and different people that I'd like to talk to. I couldn't start anywhere than without it had to
I
be.
Am the guinea pig.
No, I meant it as a compliment, not as a.
No, I know what you mean, man.
not as an experiment or anything like that. It's like I had to start with you. Yeah.
Cheers, man.
We've done so many things together over the year.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, we've become a bit like a Hale and Pace kind of double act.
Hale and Pace, yeah. Hale and Pace, Frankie Howard, and Kenneth Williams.
Kenneth Williams, yeah.
Yeah, we'll leave people watching to decide who is who.
Yeah.
This is the first in a range. Oh, not even a range, just a continuous until people don't want to talk to me anymore. Range of interviews.
That's basically my theory on things as well. I'm just going to keep doing them while people are still listening, and then I'll just put it off.
Exactly. So if it's the first time you're at my channel on this here YouTube, which is called... Let's see if you can do that again.
No, it didn't work. There we go.
The World of David Green.
Love it.
Yeah. If you're the first time here, give us a like, subscribe to the channel. Please leave us a comment as well. That'd be great. All of Tim's information about the books that we're going to may not even talk about.
It's a possibility.
And all that stuff, that will be linked below as well. This will be all here. His website, his Amazon page, his home address. It'll all be there. If you want
I've had enough of that with Facebook. Somehow I suddenly ended up with my WhatsApp being on there. I don't know how. It was like, cause I just started when my partner went to stay with her mother on like just after Boxing Day because her father died. So I was like, well, I hate talking to people on phones. I hate it. Makes my ears sweaty. It just annoys me. So it was like, well, get WhatsApp and we can talk on that. And I got it, and suddenly it appeared on Facebook. And I was getting all these like requests from sex chat lines.
Mm-hmm. No, they were weird. That was me. That was just me.
Oh, it was just you. Ah, right. Yeah. I did wonder.
Yeah. All my different phone numbers that I have, I was just sending
we
you.
We are multiple personas.
Yeah. Let's not go there. just yet. Not on the phone. I remember that because I remember going onto your page for something because even though people might think that we get on well with each other, and so I thought that too, but then I realised that you had me blocked on your Facebook page.
I haven't got you blocked on my Facebook page. I don't know what that is. The thing is, sometimes when Michelle does things, I'm blocked out of that for some reason.
Yeah, me too.
It's weird. I've no idea how.
I'm on for both of you. If but
oh no, it's that bloody David Green again.
It's there. Just block him from the Facebook page. Not our actual profile. It's just the Facebook page. I was on there because I was trying to, because I was obviously doing an event with you, and I couldn't actually see the event that I was in. With So I went on your page and it came up just saying, why don't you send Tim a WhatsApp? And I was like, why don't I? So I was like, Tim, did you know that your WhatsApp number is on Facebook? But you know what I've noticed as well, that like if you, because obviously you have a MailChimp newsletter now, that at the bottom of the newsletter, it puts your address on it as well.
First time when I sent the first few welcome messages went out with my address on it. Until my partner, she got one. She went, you do realise our address is on there, you idiot. Yeah. I was just like, I didn't realise. It did it automatically. And I don't know. I don't think it put my address into MailChimp. I've gone, God, I don't remember doing it. It's like the internet is watching you, man.
It's, like, it's part of MailChimp's service. You just put it in there and they'll find your address for you and then send it to everyone on your list. I noticed it straight away and I've still not changed it. I just can't be arsed. if people want to turn up at my door, I'd be impressed, to be honest with you, because it's like you know, you're not supposed to be leaving the country at the moment. So
that's a point. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe next year I'll change it because it's like, well, you know,
but move around again. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really mind that much. The welcome to it.
Well, to be honest, that's what I kind of thought. So obviously my partner was freaking out about it because she's a natural worrier, and I am not in any way, shape or form.
Right.
And so I was like, what are they going to do? Climb up the side of a high rise building? It's just like, I live five floors up. So what are they going to do?
They might.
I've Spider-Man knocking on my bathroom window.
Yeah. The bedroom and your bedroom is in your bathroom. Jesus.
It's not, well, it's kind of small, but it's not that small.
It makes sense sometimes, though. If I cast my mind back when I was a young single man out on the town and stuff, I think having a bed, maybe even just like a blanket in the bath, would have just made a lot of sense.
I have actually done that. I was living in a flat about 5 or 6 years ago, and we had this monstrous heat wave. And I don't do well with heat. I really don't. I struggle with it. So I actually slept in the bath because as soon as I got on the mattress, I just sweated like a devil, man. So I just took my pillow and went and lay in the bloody bath.
That's good. Why not? Like, you know,
it worked. It was cool. I managed to actually get some sleep.
Yeah. So. And there's a tap there as well in case you need some water or something. Exactly. I'm like a little dog. It's like,
Cuddle up to be rubber duck. You know,
you can waterboard yourself. Like if you've forgotten something, you need to remember.
Oh yeah,
Just be like, just tell me the information. It's it's a good way of doing things. So we might as well start talking about a little bit about some books and stuff. While we've got a crowd in, why not? And then we'll see where we go from there.
Yeah.
We'll be a bit like a bit loosey goosey, but that's what the people like.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I never bother planning for interviews.
I was going to research your book because I've never heard of you before you came on here.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I'll just roll with it. It's fine. So, obviously, you're in quite a lot of anthologies over the last 18 months or so, but you've got your own releases, you've got more of your own stuff either out or about to come out, because you've got something out coming pretty soon as well. So, you know, is that something that you're looking to do more of?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I kind of saw the anthologies and things like that. It's more of a trying to get my name a little bit. Mm. And build it, obviously, because my dream was because I'm a big fan of like people like Lovecraft and that, where most of their stuff is short stories and novellas. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to get to the point where I had enough to put a collection out.
Yeah.
And obviously you have to have a certain amount that have been released previously to do that. That's where I was coming from on that. And obviously I had a novella out at the end of last year, Burning Reflection. And that was Manison Press, and it's Manison Press who are putting out my short story collection, which the pseudopod that rocks the cradle.
Yes, the cover is great as well.
I showed you the cover. It's really really good.
Has that been revealed widely yet, or is it just
no, not yet. They were still in the editing process. As you can imagine, there's 18 stories in that. It's going to take a while to. We're getting through it, but obviously the publisher as well has other things to do other than just reread my ridiculous stories about tentacles.
so if there's 18 stories that from Tim Mendes, so we're talking ballpark 400,000 words. Give or take.
I don't know. I'm not locked out. I was just like not looking. It's getting worse, man. I finished something yesterday that was supposed to be 4K and it ended up as 10.
Yeah.
it's getting worse. I'm getting to the point where I can't seem to. It's like you give me a word count and I'll just go way over.
Yeah. I think that's something to do with more like when you're getting more experience with storytelling now and like
kind
of, because like I was doing something there, like I'm generally very good at like kind of starting something and going, right, okay, I'm going to aim for X amount of words, and it usually comes in around.
You mentioned that before. I can't do that.
No, I've gotten really bad at doing it now. Like I was doing something there for a call, which I'm not doing a lot of at the moment. I'm kind of just too busy. But like I was doing, I just thought at the start, I was like, right, I'll do 4,000 words. That's what I'll aim for, and like it's going to end up being about like the upper limit is 8,000, and it's going to be around that. So it's twice as long as what I was envisioning. But it's because like you're just kind of like you're developing more like character.
Yeah, I think that's. I mean, I've noticed myself doing a lot of that. There's a lot more dialogue in the stuff I'm writing now than there was when I started. And there's less like flowery descriptive pieces. I'm doing it through dialogue, which is something you learn as you go along. It's that whole showing not telling thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So basically by extension, my dialogue is getting a lot more. And yeah.
Yeah, no one minds that though. No one minds that. So you have the sequel to Burning Reflection in the works as well, don't you?
Yeah, I've done it. I've sent that off. That's out for submission. Yeah, that's out on submission, that one. It's going to be a trilogy, that. I did the... it's funny because the first one, the sort of the word count, the limit was sort of like 16, 17K or something. And I went over. And one was like a larger one. And they were like, oh, you won't have a problem this time. And it was like 40,000 words. And I'm like... just like,
don't tell me that. Don't tell me. It's like, don't tell me there's not a problem, like, because I will push that.
I'm literally like three words under or something stupid. It's just like, the amount of times I've done that, or like one word under the word count. It's like, look, there we go.
Not touching it. If you edit more words into it, that's your problem, not mine.
Exactly.
Isn't that right?
Yeah, and I recently had an acceptance with Black Cape for another novella, which is one I wrote a while ago. And then he needed some more work on it, and then I'd finished it, and it was one of those, you know, one of them ones where you're talking to people, and you just kind of go, do you accept novellas?
Yeah.
And DJ was just like, yeah, go on, let's send it over, let's have a look.
Yeah, I'm glad that you actually like got in with Red Cape, because like,
yeah,
I remember talking to you about them like ages ago.
I'd never heard of them.
Never heard of them. And I was like, you're in the same bloody town as them.
Like, yeah, I know.
You don't even need to email the stuff over, you can print it off and bring it round his house.
Posted it through his letterbox.
Leave it on his door, knock on it, and run away and hide behind the little guard, the hedge, and just peek out and just see if he's going to pick up.
Like a privet, like that.
Yeah. It seemed like, you know, obviously they're very much into horror. That's their kind of thing. And it was like, well, it seems like a no-brainer to me, but obviously it took a while.
it was just purely that I'd never heard of them. And then when you did tell me them, the only thing they had open was Genies.
Mm.
And I've got no interest whatsoever in Genies, like at all.
Unless you found one, then you would be interested.
Oh, yeah. If you could give me an unlimited gin bottle.
Yeah.
You know, a self-refilling gin bottle, you know.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
But, what would you... All right, let's just say, you found a lamp. A genie's lamp, right? What would your three wishes be right now? I'm putting you on the spot.
Oh, God.
You can't say unlimited wishes.
No. That's cheating. Oh, I don't know. I reckon, I reckon the unlimited, the self-refilling gin bottle would be one there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's good. That's good.
Self-filling fridge.
Self-filling fridge, that's good.
Yeah.
No word counts are limited.
Yeah. Yeah, unlimited word counts. There you go. No drabbles.
Yeah. It's like, it's a drabble call. It's okay for Tim. You can send us words. Well, so it's all these like 100-word stories, and then there's like about a 15,000 story from Tim in between all of them.
Yeah.
And people are reading it.
That'd work for me, you know.
People read it and like, I'm sure this is more than 100 words.
Yeah. I'm still happy that I managed to get 5 drabbles in your thing. Yeah. I like 5 drabbles. That's my quota for life now. That nearly killed me. Yeah. Seriously, my brain's dribbling out my nose. It's just like, oh.
The funny thing about ones that you sent in, there's like 2 of them were less than 100 words as well.
I don't know how that happened, because I did a word count on the fucking link.
Yeah. Well, you use Word, don't you? Because Word counts.
Yeah.
Word counts symbols like hash and star and dashes as a word.
See, that'll be why then.
That's why.
That makes sense, because I was like, I did a word count. How is that even possible?
When I was like editing like yours, and it was like less than 100 words, I was laughing my head off. I was like, this is just brilliant. Like, this is, of all the people to send them in that aren't 100 words, it had.
Yeah, I thought you were having a laugh with me to begin with. I was like, oh, he's taking the piss.
Yeah. I did not. I was thinking at first, because I read one of them, and I was thinking, it'd be funny if I just took out a couple of words and then said, it's less than 100 words. Or like added just like about 500 terms, like,
yeah.
No, I didn't need to. You did it for me, which was
that's funny. Hysterical. It really is.
Yeah. So you got the red cape, you've got something else, you've got a Carpe Detritus coming out as well. That's pretty
Carpe
soon.
Carpe Detritus, yeah. That's coming out middle of May.
That's
a novelette.
Yeah, I've read that. That's very good.
All right. I forgot you read that. Yeah.
It's pure Tim Mendes, is what I would say.
It is, yeah.
A story
it does of tick your... a lot of my boxes, doesn't it?
Yeah. a story of yours that a lot of people really like is Tasty Treats, and it reminded me quite a lot of that one.
Ah, right, yes.
Not saying it's like the same, it's very different, but it reminded me of
yeah, that. I can see that, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm surprised by that, because that I thought that there's no way in hell would that win that monthly contest, because I just thought it's really weird, because that was the one I was most convinced wouldn't win.
Right.
And it did. And people seem to really like it. And I'm just like,
yeah.
that's really surprised me.
Because
I just, it's one of my more bizarre pieces. Well, as it's Carpe Detritus.
It's not even pretty bizarre. It's very bizarre.
Yeah. But not bizarro.
Not bizarro. No, not bizarro.
No, it's just a genre I truly don't think I fully get, to be honest.
Bizarro fiction. No, not for me, to be honest with you. People can write it, that's great. I've never read one that I've this is good, but it's just not for me. It just annoys me a bit too much.
I think what it is, I mean, we've discussed this with weird fiction, and I think sometimes people forget that it still has to be a story.
Yeah.
Not just a bunch of random crap dotted around on a page with some funky formatting.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Fair play to them, though, to get away with it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, whatever floats your boat, isn't it? I mean, it's just, it ain't my cup of tea. Like I say, I'm still not entirely convinced I know fully what it is, if you know what I mean.
Does anyone?
Yeah. I guess that's the allure, I suppose.
But, yeah. You
It's basically the writing equivalent of those weird experimental French films you got in the fucking 60s, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And Andy Warhol watching a model, a male model, sleep for 7 hours.
Mm.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's what it is.
There you go. Right.
Did you ever see that? I actually watched part of that. I went to art college. I did an art degree, obviously, as you know.
Did you?
Yeah. So we had to watch part of that. And it's like, not the whole 7 hours, thankfully, but it's just literally a guy sleeping in a bed. It's like, wow. This is...
Well, then again, you got that on the mainstream TV with bloody Big Brother, didn't you?
Yeah.
It's like when they did the late night Big Brother. I remember once I was with a girl at the time, and I'd rolled in like after work, and I'd had a couple of drinks. And I'm sitting there, and she's watching Big Brother, and it was literally some woman sleeping with her arse hanging out of the bed.
Yeah.
So literally all it was for like hours was some woman's arse hanging out of a bed.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just, you know, people...
And with like loads of scrolling comments. We love you, whatever her name was.
It's like,
what the hell?
It's like, they're never going to see this, mate. They're never going to see your comments because they're fucking sleeping.
Yes, exactly.
Secondly,
that meant that there was people sitting there on their sofa watching somebody sleeping, texting in.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's baffling to me.
Yeah. I remember some people saying that they like to watch it because at night time when they were sleeping, it helped them sleep, which is kind of...
That's peculiar.
Psychotic, I think.
Yeah.
I surround myself with sleeping people because it helps me sleep. It's like, oh, okay.
That's kind of freaky. I don't understand that.
I sleep worse if there are people around me that are sleeping because I'm like, they're going to wake up soon and say something.
Yeah. I'm the same because I worry because I know I'm quite a restless sleeper and I like, I sort of roll around a lot and all that because of my spinal thing as well. I get these really mad twitches. Yeah. And some of them are like I'd be booting the end of the bed.
Yeah,
and I'm really conscious of waking people up.
Yeah, I remember.
So, yeah.
I remember from the time that we slept.
Under the stars, that moonlit night.
I have the black eyes to prove it. Restless sleeper, the little known follow up to Careless Whisper by Tim Mendes.
Oh, fucking hell.
That's good.
Careless Whisper.
You'd have to just do a different saxophone solo to it.
Yeah, I would have.
That's Baker Street.
That is Baker Street, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. You know what's really, really funny? As my mate's a musician, and he sent me his new song that he's doing, and like the first bar of it has a saxophone thing, and I thought in my head, it sounds a bit like Careless Whisper, just the first bar.
Yeah.
But I said to him, Baker Street, but I meant Careless Whisper. And I just quickly asked.
Careless Whisper is...
That's it, yeah. We just did the bloody opposite thing there. But the thing is that I couldn't be bothered correcting myself soon because, like, he knows what I mean. We sound like each other.
Because they were both on adverts in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
They were both on adverts, and they were both very similar adverts. I think one was a milk tray advert. It was the guy like jumping out of the helicopter in the James Bond gear with the...
Yeah. The legend.
You know.
The
legend. Oh, aye. Now that is how you woo someone.
I wonder, definitely. Just break into the house in black.
Break into the house and leave chocolates on the bed, because that ain't creepy at all.
No, not at all. I didn't take anything, I left you something.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So romantic. I wonder if the same person played sax on Careless Whisper and Baker Street. That'd be something... I'm not going to look this up, but if anyone would leave a comment and tell us, then please do, because I would be very interested. It's very similar. You know,
it is very similar, but the thing is, it's like you've got to remember that 80s sound. It's like, I think it was the same guy on all of these songs. And I think it was the guy, from The Lost Boys. That big oiled up dude. big oiled up dude with the saxophone. I reckon it was him. Tim Capello. I reckon it was him.
That's a fantastic homoerotic scene, isn't it?
Oh, it's genius. It's awesome.
Keeps cutting back to him gyrating with his saxophone.
With his saxophone. Yeah. It's the fact that he's so oiled up, man. It's like, seriously.
He's like groundskeeper.
He's slide away.
Yeah. He's like groundskeeper Willie.
Yeah, groundkeeper Willie. Yeah.
Grease me up, woman.
Grease me up. I wonder when they were filming that. If he said that. Grease me up, lads. It's time for the sax solo.
That's what it was based on. Someone, one of the writers from The Simpsons, heard about it and was like, right.
Yeah.
You know who would know if it was the same person? Patrick Bateman.
Pat Bateman would know. Of course, Yeah.
Encyclopedic knowledge of 80s music.
Yeah. Do you like Huey Lewis and the News?
Yeah.
Best scene ever.
That's a great scene, but you know what bit makes me laugh even more when he's just gone on that rant about Phil Collins and
Phil Collins, Sussudio.
And how he's like, his solo stuff is like, even though it's more mainstream, it's more like, he's just going on this, and those prostitutes are just like, it's a quality.
This is a brilliant film.
I used to recommend it to people, and like people would be like, oh, I don't want to watch a horror film. I'd say, it's a comedy, it's funny.
It's a black comedy.
Yeah. And they'd look at me like, oh, it's insane. Like, it's like, it's a comedy film. Like, there's.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I'm the same with my partner. I've still not managed to convince her to watch it yet.
Oh, well, she can hear that I have said the same thing then without even conferring beforehand.
Yeah, I think she's been bitten a few times by me going, it's not disturbing. What, seven?
Oh, well, yeah, that's See, the thing is, American Psycho, I'm not saying that it's not disturbing, because there is some disturbing bits in it.
Oh, yeah.
Very funny, though, as well.
It's all incredibly funny.
It makes me wish that Christian Bale did more comedy stuff, because he's so good in it.
Yeah. It's the deadpan delivery. It's just...
Yeah.
It's a... I'm in Murders and Executions. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've got a friend in Mergers and Acquisitions that hates it. Oh, I love it. It's like complete deadpan.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it? Love that film. While we're on about films, something that we've talked about quite a lot, and we can talk about it a little bit more now, is the your ambition, let's say, your lifelong ambition. To do the Lovecraft, Carry On Lovecraft.
Oh, aye.
Anthology or something. So we started talking about Kenneth Williams and Frankie Howard. So let's talk about this, because we were on a thing recently with a bunch of American folk, and we started talking about Carry On, and there was just blank faces. There was no idea what it was we were talking about.
Yeah.
And I feel
one of them knew bits and pieces, but not a lot.
Yeah.
And I feel it's so like quintessentially British, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Because I feel like we didn't quite get across what it is. Like, I kind of said it was like British, 60s British innuendo comedy, which also didn't, which it is, but like, I don't think it kind of, like, you know, people of like a certain age group, like our age group, were very like highly influenced by it, because I think our parents in my case, my grandparents watched it. My parents did, and they really liked it. And a lot of like comedians then who were current when we were growing up, like Rick Mayall and Rowan Atkinson, like Blackadder, Red Dwarf, all this kind of stuff, they were massively influenced by Carry On.
Chris Barry from Red Dwarf does the best Kenneth Williams impression you'll ever see. Because he started out as an impressionist, didn't he?
Yeah, Spitting Image.
On like Spitting Image, and on was it The Week That Was or whatever that?
Yeah,
I don't know. That variety show thing.
Mm.
And he does a mean Kenneth Williams impression.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah.
Well,
obviously Rick and Aid were definitely influenced by it.
I mean, the thing is as well, like, you know, when they did the Carry On Columbus, which was like the last Carry On film, which was like the. It's not great. I've got a bit of a soft spot for it. It's not great, but I'll still watch it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I enjoy it for what it is. Yeah. It's not great by any stretch of the imagination, but
no,
there's some funny stuff in it.
It was better than Carry On Manuel.
It's great.
Yeah, so yeah, it was better than
Carry On Manuel was just terrible.
Yeah, yeah. But like
there was a couple of good Kenneth Williams moments, but that was
Like the people that are in Carry On Columbus, like Rick Mayall and Julian Clary and all these kind of people, like it's people that were big fans of Carry On. So, like, what would you let's just spitball this a little bit. Like, what would you do, Carry On Lovecraft? What would be the?
Well, I was talking to Callum about this, and I came up with the idea of the Nookie Nomicon. Instead of the Necronomicon,
and
Professor Fiddler, obviously, you know, Sid James, leading an archaeological dig of young nubile women out into Peru or something.
Okay, yeah, I'm like
the sinister Dr. C. Blocker, played by Kenneth Williams. You see where I'm going with it?
I do. I see it.
Yeah.
I see it. Yeah. I like it.
And I was also had another idea. Okay, like Carry On Dagon. And it was basically the Sid James and the Hattie Jakes had forgotten to set Cthulhu's alarm clock.
Right.
So they decided to do it themselves. And then Father Dagon and Mother Hydra. And make a complete hash of the end of the world.
But what would you do? Would you do like a series of stories in like an anthology or something, or would it be like a shared world Carry On anthology?
Well, I was thinking of like just doing it as more of a just like a shared world anthology kind of thing,
right?
And basically, everybody have their own Carry On.
Their own cast.
Carry On Dagon, Carry On, Carry On Ghoul, Carry On, you know.
Carry on
Carter, about Randolph Carter in the Dreamland, you know what I mean?
Yeah, carry on up the Shoggoth.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah, exactly, you know.
Yeah.
I thought that maybe the name would probably be a problem, so I thought I'd have an eventuality for that. You could just call it Bawdy Abominations and just do it as a celebration of British comedy and the Cthulhu mythos.
Yeah. That's good. I'd be well on board with that. Sounds good. I'd love to bring like.
Do like an Up Pompeii with the.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Up Rally or something like that.
Up Relay, yeah. Up Relay.
Yeah. I'd love to just get like some people, like American people that have never seen it, just sit them down and just go, like, just watch this and see what it is. Because like for people that don't know, like it was literally like it was about 30 different films, like complete low budget, like almost zero budget films that were filmed. They filmed them in a matter of weeks.
Yeah,
and it was all the same cast. Yeah. And it was all the
same. Pinewood in the winter.
Yes. And it was all the same cast of people basically playing themselves, or caricatures of
themselves. Pretty much caricatures of themselves. That was basically it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Peter Rogers always said that he was basically the seaside postcard version of yourself.
Yes.
That's what he wanted. He wanted the seaside postcard version of you.
Yeah.
So it was brilliant. It's like because you explain the seaside, the British seaside postcards to people who don't know.
Yeah,
you know, it's like a big rotund fellow standing there, looking out to sea. I can't. His kids underneath his belly. I can't see my little Willy anywhere.
Yeah.
It's that seaside postcard humour.
Yes.
Which. It's great, isn't it?
as my very good friend from school and college and university used to call it, double entendre, as he used to say.
Nice.
That's what it's all about.
Double
entendre, yeah. So obviously people watching, we're from a similar part of the UK. Although there's some weird debate about my accent in some parts of the writing internet.
Yeah, I've got to say that for people who think you sound Irish, I've obviously never heard an Irish person in their lives.
It's really weird, isn't it? Because people are like, oh, it's like it's Tim Mender, and they'll hear me and they'll be like, oh, it's an Irishman. It's like, we sound exactly like each other.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Like, yeah, I honestly don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm just disappearing into the distance. It's come
yeah,
back.
It's a really strange illusion. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
A few times tonight, you've had a disembodied head, which is, you kind of looked a bit like Holly from Red Dwarf.
That'd be good to do that, wouldn't it? I just like it.
Yeah, it would.
I'm lifting up my beer and it just kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, that's fine. We're both drinking Heineken tonight as well.
Yeah, I've noticed that. We are not sponsored, before anybody says.
Although, if you would like to sponsor me, that's fine. You can do it. Whatever.
I'm not saying no. I'm not saying no.
So you've moved around the UK quite a lot. Obviously, you got some Scottish heritage, but you were obviously you're in the northwest of England then, and you became a traitor and left. And now you're
yeah, the first place I left, I went and lived in the Midlands. So Dudley, I lived in Dudley for 5 years. Yeah,
that's
man, I was a proper traitor.
That's ridiculous. Why did you do that?
That was a job. No, oh. It was a manager I worked with when I became a chef, and he moved down, and I fell out with the new management quite catastrophically. And it was somebody's birthday, and we were at the same thing, and I was bitching and moaning, drunk and just bitching, you know. And he's just like, "Well, I need a head chef. Come and work for me." Yeah. It's like, all right. And like, it's 2 weeks later, I'm there. I'm gone. I'm just out.
Yeah. It's great how often you can get jobs by just talking to someone, and they're just like,
"Yeah, yeah,
oh, yeah. Come and work for me." Like, it's fine, and you're kind of like. Especially when you're out drinking and you kind of like next, you don't do anything. Then next time you see them, you kind of think, will they remember this?
Yeah.
And then it comes up, it's like, how come you've not sent me
a CV? How come you didn't give us a ring? Yeah.
I didn't know you were, I thought you were joking. I actually did that with one of my neighbors here, like a couple of days ago. His son came and knocked on for my son. They're only like both 3 years old. And he came out, and I was just like, in my like t-shirt and pajama pants, basically, like proper slobbing it. And I just said some jokingly wise, I was like, "Oh, do you want a beer while you're here?" And he was like, "Oh, yeah. And I didn't realize he was being serious. And then I went, I thought, "Oh, let's go and put some pants on." Right. And my wife wandered past, and she went to him, do you want a coffee or anything? And he was like, no, I think Dave's getting me a beer. Didn't get him a beer. And then his son like kind of ran off, so we had to go and get him anyway. So it was like, it was fun. But I felt really bad about it, because I was like, oh man, I was joking, because I was thinking it was just to say, because like, you know.
Yeah, you're in your pants. Yeah. Yeah, I've been scaring the crap out of the residents here, because I forget. I spend most of my time sitting around in my pants, basically. Especially because my partners have been away since Boxing Day. So I've just regressed to a teenager. I've been sitting eating Pringles playing video games. And the door opens and I open it and I was scratching my backside. Like, what?
Yeah. I bet postmen during this pandemic have seen some. They're not going to recover from this.
I bet there's some postie's been scarred for life, man.
Oh man, the therapists for post, like the post will actually get their own in-house therapists for them. Like,
I'm surprised they don't already, to be honest. There's a reason it's called going postal for a reason. You know?
Yeah. You mentioned video games before.
Mm.
So let's talk about some video games. Because every time that we've talked. And one of these things, we threaten to talk about video games, and then we'll do it at a different time. We will circle back round to books before we finish. We'll see.
Yeah.
So, like, when you talk about video games, like, people have like the favorite series and stuff, or stuff that was like Samina when they were growing up.
Yeah.
And one me and you have talked about quite a bit is Secret Monkey Island.
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
Oh, such a great game. So good. I first had it on the Amiga.
Mm.
I had the first one on the Amiga. It was the sequel I was thinking of now that was like 12 discs.
Yes.
Yeah. Was bonkers. But it was before I had it on the Amiga, and it was before I had an external hard drive, so I couldn't save.
Yeah, I was the same. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're playing Monkey Island, you basically just had to keep playing it.
Keep playing it. Yeah.
And it's a pretty long game.
It was when you were a kid. When it got re-released, they got like a remaster on the Xbox 360.
I still keep meaning to pick that up, and I just haven't done it for some reason.
Oh, hand drawn and everything, it looks great. And you can press the button and it switches in between the two styles.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a really good port. It's just I've just never got around to getting it.
But there was an achievement on it. That's like, because that's people that don't know, like when you're playing on games these days, it rewards you for playing games, which is brilliant. Like, it's nice. It comes up with like a little score or a little trophy saying, well done.
Yeah, and a little ping.
It makes you feel great about yourself for doing this obscure thing that it's asked you to do. But there was an achievement on the Monkey Island one.
And some of them bloody puzzles, man. It's just the rubber chicken. Fucking rubber chicken.
Rubber chicken. I never knew what that was. And I was like, I was thinking that, but I was playing that game so much, I always thought, rubber chickens must be everywhere. I've never seen one.
My friend's got a rubber chicken called Roger Me Harder.
Very nice. Very
there we go.
Well, yeah, so the achievement was to finish the game in less than 4 hours. And I was like, man. And I did it. I got the achievement for it. Like, it was...
Right.
I just did it the first time, just from memory. Mm. But then I was thinking, when I was a kid, like... What we used to do, there's a few of us playing it in school, and obviously none of us could save the game. Because I had it on the Atari STE. So we'd play it over the weekend, right? And you get to the point where you got stuck by a puzzle. You try and figure it out, and then it'd be like, time to go to bed or something.
Yeah, that's what me and my mates did pretty
much. Yeah, and you go back to school then on the Monday, and you talk to your mates about where you're up to, and then someone's like, oh, I got a bit further than you, I figured this out, and then you talk about it. But the thing was, though, you didn't have time to play that bit until Saturday.
Yeah.
So you'd literally be talking about it all week. Get to Saturday, you'd boot it up, speed run all the way through until where you got.
And then you get stuck again 2 minutes later.
And you couldn't save it. So this is the way, and I remember, and this is the thing, right? I don't remember it from most video games, but that one in particular, I remember vividly the first time I completed that game.
Yeah.
Because it was such
a game. I do, yeah.
It took about 8 hours. It's like more than that. Like, instead, because all my mates.
I remember this one. You know the bit when you finally get to Monkey Island and you get thrown in the hut by them three guys.
Yeah.
And every time you try and get out, they just catch you and put you back.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
took me fucking weeks to figure out.
Yeah.
That took me weeks to figure that out. And the sword. Oh, the bloody swordmaster. With the. You know, with the.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That you fight like you stop waving it around like a feather duster, you know, all that.
You fight like a chicken, how appropriate, you fight like a cow.
Yeah, that's it. There you go. Yeah.
And the second one came out. And the second one, for my money, is better, but it's also...
It is. Yes, it is.
It's also... It is bizarre at the end as well. And I remember... I don't remember the first time I finished that one, but I remember everything about the ending. And I just remember this feeling of like... It was the first time, like
at the end. Yeah,
yeah. It was the first time as a child where I was kind of like, I was
a fourth wall, isn't it? It's just like, really weird.
So, because the first one, it was probably in primary school for both of them. I would have been earlier than 11 doing both of these.
Yeah.
So it was the first time with the second one where I came across anything like breaking the third wall, all this kind of bizarro, weird. Fiction, I suppose, because of my age, I've never been introduced to like Monty Python yet or anything like that.
Right. Well, the thing is, I was already into that absurdist humor. And right. It is incredibly Python-esque, the Monkey Island games. They're incredibly Python. I remember the one bit in the second one, man, where you've got to do that spitting competition.
Oh yeah, yeah.
How convoluted was that?
Yeah,
you had to go to a certain place to get a certain thing to mix a certain type of grog that made it sticky, but then it didn't tell you that you had to wait till the flag went like that.
Yeah, and you had to plant. You had to move the flags too.
Oh, you did. Oh, I forgot. Yeah, you did, didn't you? You had to move the flags. Actually, you had to do a distraction to get there to move the flags.
Yes. Yeah.
Wasn't it cannons or something? You had to.
Yeah, fire the cannons. I mean, you'd be doing it so long to get this right that the dialogue would change and the things would go off and the guy'd be like, I should not be looking at this because it's happened so much, but I'm going to turn my back and look. So if there's something that you want to do, then just do it now.
Yeah.
The ending of it's just, it was like...
Oh, it goes all over the place, doesn't it, the ending? First you had that really annoying bit in the cave where it was like a maze. And you had to sort of go left off the screen twice, right off the screen once, then left off the screen again. And this went on for ages. Otherwise, you'd just come back to the beginning.
Yeah, LeChuck would capture you. Yeah,
LeChuck would just capture you and basically shaft it, and you have to start that sequence all over again.
I just imagine reading a book where the equivalent of that ending happened in the book. Like, I wonder how people would
look that. You'd probably get death threats or something. Yeah. Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
Were you into all the point and click games in general, or?
I was to a degree. I was into pretty much anything at that point because I started out with the Commodore 64, and then I got an Amiga when they came out. There were some great point and clicks. It's like, I can never remember the name of it, but it was made by LucasArts, and it was basically like a spoof on James Bond. And I can't remember what it was called, but it was really funny. I can't for the lot. And obviously, Day of the Tentacle is a classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever play the Indiana Jones?
Day of Atlantis. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Yeah,
that was cool.
That was always the rumor that this is probably when it was in magazines, so it's probably pre-internet sort of stuff. But the rumor, and I saw it then on the internet when Indiana Jones 4 film was being made, and everyone was always like, they're going to base the next Indiana Jones film on the fate of Atlantis.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I remember that rumor.
Yeah. They never did
that.
They
really should have done.
It was good.
That film. It's just
awful. I wonder.
I was actually quite enjoying it, but then I'm sorry, but for me the illusion was broken every time Kate Blanchett tried to do a Russian accent. It just completely shafted it for me, and then it just went even. Then suddenly you got aliens and
interdimensional beings. They're not aliens. They're interdimensional beings.
Okay. Right.
It's like, then why have you made them look like aliens?
Yeah, why are you little green men, man? It's the greys, isn't it? It's proper Roswell shit.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Because it was like, it's because it was set in the 50s, so they wanted it to reflect 50s
Roswell
movies and stuff like that and whatever else. But they could have just made them look like people, like just people in suits or something.
Yeah,
shiny
people, you know.
Because they're not aliens, so it's like they're aliens. They look like aliens. They're in a massive big UFO. They're aliens. Let's just do it like that. They're aliens.
It was like ET's granddad.
I don't mind it. The biggest criticism that I have of it is Shia LaBeouf, obviously, because it's just, and that's not anything about Shia LaBeouf in it, because I can take or leave him. I think he's good in some stuff,
I'm kind of indifferent to him, to be brutally honest.
I think he's probably
all right in Transformers.
Yeah, he was good in some stuff. He's done some interesting stuff. He's also a terrible human being by the sounds of things. But anyway,
but yeah, like, well, I wasn't going to go there, but yeah.
I just think it's like just horribly miscast in that film, and it's like, and as well, just like the idea of India.
Well, like I say, I mean, I think Kate Blanchett was incredibly miscast.
In yeah, well. Yeah.
It was basically kind of the least like, threatening dominatrix ever.
Yeah, it was kind of one of those things where it was like, who's popular these days?
Yeah,
and it was like,
obviously, Blanchett had just come off the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, and then you had, and Ray Winston was like quite popular as that kind of cockney white boy kind of character.
Yeah.
And that was the thing with like the previous films, like all the supporting people in it were just like just people that used to pop up as like an extra in Star Wars. Like they weren't they weren't like a main star or anything apart from Sean Connery. But that was like an in joke because it was like because it was originally written because like Steven Spielberg wanted to do Bond and he couldn't get to do Bond. But like George Lucas was like, I've got something better.
Yeah.
And that's why they wanted to get Connery for it. But other than
Sean Connery. So
Yeah. But other than that, it was all just like It was
a bunch of no name people to a degree, wasn't it?
Because like even like Last Crusade, which is like, you know, well anticipated. I remember going to the cinema to watch it in 89, so I was like 6. Came out the same week as Batman 89 as well.
I think I saw both of those at the cinema.
And like it was massively hyped, and it was Harrison Ford, probably the biggest movie star on the planet, Steven Spielberg, and like the main villain was the guy who was the ATAT commander in Empire Strikes Back in one scene.
Yes.
And that's...
Well, he was great. He was bloody great.
And he went on to be in Game of Thrones as well. Well, that's what the kind of people they were. Like, it was just actors, character actors. And then in the fourth one, it was like, let's get who's the flavour of the month. We'll put them in it.
Yeah.
So that's where
I think that's where they went horribly wrong. It's just like
Because it ages the film then as well, because you kind of like, if you ever go back and watch it, you see like Shia LaBeoufing around. It's like, oh, they're obviously trying to make him the next Indiana Jones if he was popular. It's like when you go and watch like those middle Mission Impossible films, which are good films, but Jeremy Renner like appears out of nowhere.
Oh yeah, he does, doesn't he? Yeah.
Then it's like, because they did the same with the Bourne films as well. He had his own Bourne film, and it's like obviously someone was like, this guy's gonna be a big star. Let's put him in our films.
I do find that really funny that his first major role was playing Jeffrey Dahmer.
Have you listened to his music?
No, I haven't. No.
Oh man, it's after this, before you go and do your next engagement later on tonight, because I know you're a busy man. Go on Spotify, look him up, and listen to his music. It will be very different to what you're expecting, I'm sure.
Cool.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah, no, because I remember like the only times I'd ever seen this guy was he played Dharma, and he played a serial killer vampire in Angel. In the first series of Angel. Yeah. It's probably one of my favourite episodes. Angel thinks he's like going rogue again. So he gets himself all chained up so he doesn't, you know, vamp about a bit. But it turns out it's somebody he's sired. And that turns out it's Jeremy Renner. It's a really, really good, really, really good episode.
Because Jeremy Renner is surprisingly old.
He is, yeah.
Like he's been around for a long time. I think the first thing I saw him in was The Town.
That episode of Angel must have been sort of
early 2000s, probably.
Very early, yeah. And I remember the Dharma film must have been, I think that was his first big break. And that was around 99, I think.
Right.
99, 2000, something like that.
Never watched Angel, but I do know a random bit of trivia.
I really liked Angel. I thought it was great.
I know a random bit of trivia about David Boreanaz. However, it's called. Angel played by
the guy.
He's like, Angel is supposed to be from the Cladder in Galway. My hunter.
Yes. Oh, it's so funny when he tries to do that bloody accent.
He's trying to do one, isn't it?
Oh, he tries it. Yeah, he does try it. It's really, really funny.
Listen, like I'm not into profile enough where people are from, and you know there is in Connemara there was there is some like Spanish influence in Connemara from some in some parts, but it's the least Irish looking person in the world.
Yes, yeah, he really is. Yeah. To be fair to him, he got better at the accent, but the first time he did it as Liam before he was turned. Oh, it's so funny. Yeah.
His surname
is father. It's so top of the morning to you. You know what I mean?
I'm gonna have to watch this episode because I want to see how they depict the Cladder as well. Because I used to live on the Cladder. I lived there.
Right. Oh, right. I can make you laugh, man.
So I
can make you laugh.
His last name isn't Lynch, is it? Is he not called Liam Lynch?
Yeah, Liam Lynch.
Is he really?
I think so.
That's just a complete guess because it's so fucking cliche.
I don't know. I don't know. It sounds right.
It's such a cliche calling someone Liam Lynch. Oh man, I'm gonna have to check this out. I'm gonna have to watch it.
Oh yeah, you should. It's funny.
It's a multiple episode set in the Cladder, or is it just a?
Oh, it's just bits and bit of like flashbacks and stuff like that.
I never really watched Buffy either, which is probably surprising seeing it's like
Well, to be absolutely honest, I didn't until I got with my partner and she was just like, just watch it. And I was like, no interest. But I loved it. I thought it was brilliant. But the thing is, I to me, Buffy the Vampire Slayer was the film.
Yes. Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that.
See, very, so very I was confused when they brought it out. I was like, that's not Buffy.
Also, didn't everyone hate this film?
I loved it. The thing is, it was so camp. I just thought it was hysterical. I remember I watched it. And what they used to do on late night Channel 4 was they'd have a classic followed by a new one about a genre. So you'd have like a new mummy film and an old mummy film.
Right, okay.
And we're talking mid-90s here. Mm-hmm. So when I say new, it's just, you know, but you'd basically have Hammer Horror. So basically you had Christopher Lee and then you had Buffy.
Right.
Brilliant.
Okay, I get it.
I think in that context, it probably makes more sense.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I haven't seen it since then, so when I'm saying I really enjoyed it, it might be utterly terrible. I just remember I enjoyed it at the time. Let's leave it at that.
I did something similar last night. I don't know what possessed me to do it, but it wasn't even on a streaming site. I actually rented this off through the Xbox store, Mortal Kombat Annihilation. Not the first one, which is good. The second
one. The first
one,
one's great.
Yeah. The second one, which is possibly one of the worst films of all time. I think I just wanted to watch it just to see if it was like, if it was so bad, it was good. And there is some bits that just had
There's
me.
Any redeeming qualities, yeah.
And there were some bits in it that had me howling with laughter. Because there was, there's a bit where they just remixed Raiden, so it's not even the James Remar Raiden, because obviously it was Christopher Lambert in the first one, but it's the bit where he gets his hair cut and everything. He's fighting against someone, but it's actually Ray Park, who is Darth Maul, his stunt double, and he can clearly see his face as well. And he's fighting against someone, and they're trading roundhouse kicks, and they're not touching each other at all, they're just spinning around like bats.
Spinning.
At each other. And it's like, wow, this is fantastic. It's so bad.
I can't actually remember it at all because I remember it was one of those late night drunken rent it from the video shop moments.
Yeah.
For me.
I went to the cinema to watch it. I went to the cinema.
Have a go.
I remember going to watch it. It was like 1997. I went with a couple of mates from school. And there was these kids that were younger than us sat behind us right in the next row, even though the place was empty. And every time, like, because like the first one has like a storyline which you can, and it has like decent acting, and it has like, you know, just progression. The second one is just literally just the characters just wandering into a new setting, and just people just like someone will literally just appear out of nowhere and they'll fight them.
So yeah, I seem to remember it being more like a music video than an actual film.
Yeah. a really bad music video. Every time someone would appear, they'd go, "Oh, it's Noob Saibot. They're special movies." This is this. I remember like one of my mates at one point.
Oh, Noob Saibot. Oh, damn it. I wanted to kill my friend because of that fucking character, Noob Saibot. Every time he did that, Well, he only played as Noob Saibot, and me and my other mate just couldn't beat him because, not because he was good, just because he kept spamming that move.
Yeah, that's like people that used to play as...
You just get stunlocked, don't you? It's just like...
That's like people that used to play as Oddjob on GoldenEye. We had a rule where it was like, you can't play as Oddjob, no one's allowed to do it. Because he was too short, so people... You'd miss him when
you to actually shoot, and you had to do that because it was really awkward with the Nintendo 64 to look up and down.
I love that console, but I still to this day have not figured out the actual way you're supposed to hold that pad.
No, I was about to ask you, like,
I used to hold it right. I used to hold it like this.
Hold it there like that, and then what do you do? So I was holding it sort of like this.
Yeah, that's what I did, like a crab.
Yeah.
I used to like
hold like a crap. kind of like that. And it was the most unintuitive thing ever created.
Yeah. I think what you're supposed to do, you're supposed to hold the middle bit and then use your hand here to do all the other bits.
But what about the buttons on the other side?
Exactly. What about those buttons? I don't know. So.
And the triggery bits at the top. What the fuck are we supposed to do?
It's a weird one. But good times, though.
Had one in the pub where I worked at the Bull's Head in Mottram St Andrew outside of Alderley Edge, and the head waiter had one. We used to bring it down after hours, and we'd plug it in at the bar telly and get hammered and play GoldenEye.
That's the way. And Perfect Dark was even better, I thought.
I loved Perfect Dark.
I thought
that was a great game.
Yeah, it's really inventive. I
actually had to buy the rare replay thing for the Xbox.
Oh, yeah.
Which had Perfect Dark and Perfect Dark Zero on it.
Yeah.
Gutted that they didn't have GoldenEye on it. But that was rights. Because they were bringing out that god-awful Reloaded thing, weren't they?
Yeah. That's so bad.
That was really bad.
So bad.
Nothing's it quite meets the terrible. That is 007 Legends. Did you ever play that?
Yeah.
God, that was shit. Just nonsensical. Here's a mission in GoldenEye. The next mission, you're in Octopussy. Yeah. The next mission, you're in... Why is it even going on?
It's a weird one, isn't it? It's like... The people that do the Hitman games have got the license for Bond now. And you think, well, that's a good marriage of like pedigree and what type of game Hitman people make.
The thing is, I've thought that before because Raven Software got it, and they were the guys who made like Hexen and Heretic and worked with id Software. So I thought if anyone could do a first-person shooter, it's them guys.
And I think it's cursed. I actually think like Rare cursed it with GoldenEye because this one coming out, this one from the people of Hitman, all they need to do is basically just reskin it as Bond and go, here you go. But something's going to go wrong somewhere along the line.
Yeah.
And it'll be just a disaster. And it'll be like, well, GoldenEye is still number one.
Yeah,
like 30 years old at this point, and it's still unbeaten.
Jesus, it is, isn't it? As well.
Yeah. Oh, very nearly. 1997, it came out.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, far off. I'd say that far off. It's still six years, but still far off.
Yeah, like it terrifies the crap out of me when you see how old Doom is.
Yeah.
It's just like, what?
It's gotten really bad. It's gotten really bad of late for me because. Obviously, I've
got a Resident Evil anniversary as well, haven't you?
Having a child and stuff, like, it makes you think about time a lot more. Like,
I imagine, yeah.
But then I was thinking there the other day, like, I was like, because I'm a big Man United fan, as you know, and 1999, when United won the treble, the league, FA Cup. Champions League, still as of today's result where City got knocked out of the FA Cup, still something that has not been repeated. That was 22, 23 years ago now, right? 22 years ago, right? By the time, like, when I started getting into football, I was like 6 or 7, right? So when Ollie is, my son is that age, the same amount of time will have gone past from when United did the treble to when I started getting into football and George Best, Bobby Charlton, and Dennis Law were playing for United and won the European Cup in the 60s.
Okay.
Yeah, the people that I grew up watching, and not
this
even,
is why you don't overthink things, dude.
I can't help it. So these people that I kind of grew up watching, not even just grew up watching them. I went to watch them train at the Cliff. I have photographs of them. I have autographs of them, and all this kind of stuff. Like they're like so. When I was like getting told by my grandparents and people about George Best, I was like, man, that's a long time ago. That's what it's going to be like for him when I say to him like, oh, Eric Cantona, he'll be like.
Well, like, what, the Karate Kid?
That old guy from the last century.
The one who did the karate kick.
Yeah. So, yeah, you kind of think about it a lot more.
I have it with music all the time. It's like one of my favourite albums is Trouble Gum by Therapy. And I was talking to my partner's little sister, and she said she was born the same year that came out. And I was just like, oh my God.
Oh, that's not
terrifying.
That's not good. Yeah. I think I told you this before. I had to, I was when I was last kind of working, obviously, like I'm full time dad now and what have you. Mm. And I was talking to someone who was in like the early 20s, and I said something about recording something, taping something off the TV. And
taping
like,
it,
yeah, VHS. Like, right. And they're like, what? And I was like, yeah, VHS. And they had no idea what VHS was. No idea.
I've still got VHS tapes. I've still got a VHS player.
Yeah. You look like someone that would have VHS tapes, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's like, it's what I mean, if you came in like when I was working.
I've still got cassettes.
Yeah. Not even Sony have cassettes anymore. They just got rid of them all. They were like, just no one's going to bother with these anymore. Just send them all to members.
Yeah, send them all. I actually managed to find somewhere I could buy some new VHS tapes. They're ridiculously expensive now. Yeah. Yeah, seriously.
Which is weird because tape wears down. So you think.
Yeah.
It won't get more expensive because the quality degrades over time. So if anything, they should get less expensive because it's like,
yeah, no, these were newly manufactured video.
Oh,
videos.
Really?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, when you could actually get them in Maplin.
Okay.
To like about 10 years ago, I reckon.
Right. When I was doing my degree, like my like kind of main part of the degree was film. We had to like make films and stuff, and like the camera that we had recently, we had to buck them out of the uni and stuff, and they were literally these ones that you'd sit on your shoulder like this and load a VHS into them and you just record it onto the
TV. Yeah. Brilliant, mate.
Yeah.
I've got an old editing suite, the splicer.
Oh,
I've got
one of them,
videotapes, with the old, tie it up with the wheels and your razor blade out and
Yeah, those were the days.
I've got one of those. Yeah,
those were the days.
It makes me laugh now because it's so easy, isn't it? You just go delete. Whereas you have to physically cut bits out.
You can do it on your bloody phone, like.
You can
fly on the phone, which is we're sounding like really old men now. We should stop talking about this.
We're sounding like
sodding. What's that Russ Abbott? Do you know Russ Abbott?
Oh, God,
The old men, they'd be like, they'd be there with the carrier bags and stuff. That's what we're talking into now. So let's before we wrap up, let's talk about some books again, right? So obviously, this is called What You're Selling. So if we're going to start to say that the quintessential Tim Mendes thing that you can go out, anyone who's watching can go out and get right now, what would be the quintessential?
It's out right now.
Right now.
Probably Burning Reflection.
Right.
Yeah, the novella.
Why Burning Reflection?
I don't know. It's just, it's one of my my very Lovecraftian ones. And I just don't know. I think it kind of just works.
Okay.
I'm quite happy with the atmosphere in that. You know, trying to put in my twist on it. Other than that, I'd probably say also 13 Victims, which you are a part of, which was sort of, yeah, Jack the Ripper meets Cthulhu mythos.
Yes.
Again, that kind of sums me up all over, really.
Very much so. Yeah. For good reasons, though, not for bad reasons, for good reasons. Not saying that you are like a serial killer or anything like that. Nah. It's good. So what's your ambition? What do you want to, what you're looking to do sort of 2021 and beyond? What do you want to do? What do you want to achieve?
Basically, it's weird, just more of the same but different. I know it's a hedge, like a completely fucking bleh answer. But I've got other novellas and I just want to, and I want to focus more on, obviously I've got a novel that's nearly finished. I've got another novel that just needs tweaking. I'm part of a lot of projects, which I'm really enjoying doing. But at some point this year, I'm going to have to just stop and pull back and just concentrate a bit more on some bigger things. Which is why I'm not doing as many calls and things like that. It's I need to bloody focus a little bit. I'm so chaotic in the way I work that I'll just sort of go and see what happens. I think I need to try and focus a little bit. Just more of that, really.
That's why it kind of, not like in a nasty way or anything, but it made me laugh when you told me that you had like a collection coming out because I was like, because obviously you need to write those things and then they sit on them for a while and don't send them anywhere. And it's like, so I was laughing because like, you must have really fought the temptation to see a call come up and go, I've got something for that.
Oh God, yeah. Yeah, that was tricky. That was tricky.
how many of those 18 are new stories?
Eight. Yeah.
So that's a lot. That's a lot of words that you're just sitting on.
Yeah.
Watching calls.
I wrote a lot of them just like at that time.
Right.
There was, I don't know why, what happened or whatever. There just wasn't a lot of calls or anything. And I just carried on and on and on and on. And I was just like, there's this piece that I've never found a home for. There's this, because a lot of my stuff doesn't. I tend to just write whether there's calls or not.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff that I write doesn't fit anywhere, at all. It's just like, I mean, the amount of rejections I've had saying, "Really good story. Did you read the brief?" This has got nothing to do with the fucking brief.
What are you doing, man?
I have a lot of those stories which are just kind of like, I've no idea where I'm going to be able to send this, like, at all.
So that helps.
They're the ones that kind of just sort of went, well, I'll keep them on the back burner.
Yeah. That helps for a collection then. It's just like if you've got like a lot of stuff where it's like, I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, they're all very. I mean, the thing is, I think some of those are the most quintessentially me that I've written, and I think people who appreciate things like Tasty Treats will definitely appreciate some of the stuff. It's just 9 times out of 10, when you get yourself, when you get anthologies, there's quite a lot of them are very, very, very specific.
Yes,
and. I really struggle to fit in with briefs. It's something I'm not very good at. And I don't want to try and be that good at, because I think there is stories I've written that if I'd have done it slightly different, it would have fit, but it wouldn't have sounded like me.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get you.
It wouldn't have been one of my stories. It had been me trying to write somebody else.
Yeah.
And I don't ever want to get into that trap.
Yeah.
Because it's a trap I've seen authors get into. And I'm not talking indie authors now. I'm talking like published authors.
Yes.
They'll get themselves in a trap of writing who they think people want them to be, as opposed to just being themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't ever want to fall into that trap, but it's,
yeah.
You know.
It's tricky enough because, like, I mean, it's a good skill to be able to write two calls and kind
yes.
of, but mold your own voice to that call, yeah. not just be like,
which is what I try and do, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, that's the
way. You know, I mean, but by the same token, I'm not going to beat myself up about it for getting one of those rejections.
Yes.
Just saying, it's a good story, we liked it, doesn't fit.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
I'd rather get that than somebody going, meh, a bit crap.
Exactly. Well,
yeah.
Tim Mendes, thank you very much for coming on.
My pleasure, sir.
Thank
My
you.
My pleasure.
I'm going to put all your links below, but probably the most important thing to say is that if you go onto Tim's website, which is...
WordPress.com.
just
no, work. No! Oh, timmendeswriter.wordpress.com.
There we go. He remembered. If you go on there, he has a newsletter. You sign up for your newsletter.
Yep.
You get a free story, a free bit of Tim. Put on
your happy face.
Yeah. Because...
not what you called it multiple times.
Happy face. Yeah, that's right. It's a really great story. It's a great Lovecraftian King in Yellow story that you can get for free for signing up to Tim's lovely newsletter. So that'll all be linked below. Say, if you're here for the first time, there's going to be lots of more interviews coming up. Already on the channel, there's readings from myself, there's like news updates. It's the home of Ease in the Reader, which is a Wheel of Time podcast.
I keep meaning to read some of that. I keep meaning to watch some of that. Between you and Holtman nerding out.
Yeah, well, you know what? You can read Wheel of Time and watch the podcast at the same time. It's wonderful. All right. So there's all that kind of stuff. Other things on there as well. So, subscribe to it if you would. Give us a like. Give us a comment. Let us know if you played any video games. What you thought. How long did it take you to finish Monkey Island?
I dread to think how long it actually took.
The first time.
There wasn't walkthroughs, man. There wasn't.
Yeah.
FAQs back then.
Nope. There was no internet. So.
No, there wasn't. There wasn't at all when I was playing.
Also, what things for people listening? What things terrify you when you think, "Oh my God, this thing was 30 years ago"? Let us know. I would love to know. So for now, Tim, thank you very much for coming on. I have to come on again sometime.
My pleasure, mate.
When you've got something else to sell, come on to me.
Indeed.
All right.
I will.
Until next time. Speak to you soon.